When it comes to a year that featured the top slate of American films, 1939 and 1969 are often mentioned. 39 had movies like Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, while 69 included True Grit and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. But a new book argues that 1999's collection of flicks like Election, Office Space, and The Matrix puts that year in first place.
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
I have a bad feeling about this.
I don't sense anything.
Tell me, Dr. Schwartz, what do you feel you can bring to Lester Corp?
Well, sir, I'm an excellent filer.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's see about that.
All you ever knew were apples. Apples, apples, and more apples. You might think apples were pretty good, even if you got a rotten one once in a while. But then one day, there's an orange. And now you can make a decision. Do you want an apple, or do you want an orange? That's democracy.
I also like bananas.
The book we're talking about is Best Movie Year Ever, How 1999 Blew Up the Big Screen. Its author is Brian Raftery, and he's with me. Brian, it's fun for a lot of people to argue about which year was the best for movies. So why did you pick 1999?
I think there's a lot of reasons, one of which is that when you look at just the filmmakers of that year, it's really kind of this very unique kind of collision of generations. You have people like Stanley Kubrick and George Lucas coming back to make their first movies in at least a decade. You have a lot of brand new filmmakers making their first movies, like Spike Jonze or Brad Bird, who did The Iron Giant, or Kim Pierce, who did Boys Don't Cry. And then you have all these filmmakers who kind of spent the 80s and 90s really sort of making a name for themselves, whether it's David Fincher, who did Fight Club, or Steven Soderbergh, who did The Limey, or Michael Mann, who did The Insider. To me, it just feels like one of these very rare years where, in addition to these movies being really interesting and fascinating to rewatch and talk about, it was just a year where I feel like all these very talented filmmakers of different generations were kind of given just enough money and just enough freedom to make whatever movie they wanted.
And does best movie year ever mean that they were the best movies? Because, of course, with George Lucas, I'm sure a lot of Star Wars fans would say, well, it was great to have him back, but that wasn't exactly his best work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the title is best period, movie period, year period, ever period, which, you know, for those, it's been funny kind of talking about the book because those of us who grew up online sort of know that's a kind of sarcastic way of making a big point. To me, I feel like that year had a movie like The Matrix, which to me was very much an heir to The Wizard of Oz. You know, you have a movie like The Insider, which to me is very reminiscent of All the President's Men. You have a lot of films that year that I think are pulling from the last, 70, 80 years of film history. But at the same time, they're very much looking forward and moving forward to what's ahead. And that's why you get a movie like The Blair Witch Project, which, you know, when I interviewed all these people for this book, there was a real generational divide on that movie. But people who were, you know, about my age and they were in their 20s or 30s when that movie came out, that was an amazing film. We'd never had a movie just sort of shot on these digital cameras and just sort of edited together like a reality show like before. And I think that kind of movies like that kind of helped set the tone for the next 20 years.
Yeah, maybe that gets forgotten, the fact that because we see a lot of these things now and forget that maybe we didn't really see them before 1999.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of innovations that year. I mean, even someone like, you know, even a movie like Being John Malkovich, you know, it's impossible to look at Being John Malkovich and say, well, look at all these Being John Malkovich ripoffs, but because it's an impossible movie to copy. But I really think if you look at it, just the sort of detached humor in that, the sort of strange self-introspection, the playfulness of that movie, I feel like you see a lot of that. I think that kind of helped influence a lot of internet humor. I mean, for, you know, it's one of those movies that you look at that year and you go, okay, The Matrix, Being John Malkovich, Fight Club, even if you didn't love these movies, even if you didn't see them, you've sort of seen these echoes of them in the years that came afterward.
Are some of these movies in 1999 ones that have stood the test of time? You think they will continue to?
I think so. And I think what's interesting is a lot of the movies that came out that year that are so big now in the culture were not hits at the time. I mean, you know, Fight Club was sort of famously not a huge hit for Brad Pitt or for David Fincher. And yet that movie is more popular now than I think it's ever been. You know, a movie like Eyes Wide Shut, which was a very strange film at the time. It was the Stanley Kubrick directed sort of sex drama that they spent, you know, almost 2 years with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman filming in secret. that movie has had a remarkably large cultural imprint in the last 20 years. And I think it's one of those movies that, you know, if it comes on, to me, it's so funny because that movie is the opposite of Goodfellas in terms of its energy. It's very slow and hypnotic, but it has that same thing with Goodfellas where if you watch 15 minutes and you've already seen it 100 times, you're like, oh, I'll watch this again. You kind of get pulled into it. And I think a lot of the movies of that year have a real sort of rewatchability. I mean, a movie like Office Space, which no one saw when it came out. You know, I interviewed everyone involved with that movie, and some of those cast members went to go see it on opening weekend, and two of them in different theaters sat there and realized they were basically the only person there on opening weekend. The movie was a huge bomb, but boy, who does not know Office Space? Who has not watched it? Who has not, you know, sent a gif of Gary Cole as Lumberg to a coworker at one point? That movie is just, it's perennial. It's just, it'll never go away.
All right, so you were in your 20s then. You're in your 40s now.
Yeah.
And how has that changed the perception of any of the films, not just as someone who is heavily involved in pop culture, but someone just as a human being? Did you notice maybe there was one you watched at 24, 25 that you watched 20 years later that you like more, dislike more?
I certainly relate differently to some of these movies. You know, I was in my 20s when these movies came out, and there are two films from that year that are about two very young, ambitious people who sort of wrestle with these middle-aged protagonists. And one is Election, which is Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. And one is Rushmore, which technically came out very late in 98 in a couple of theaters, but was basically a 1999 movie. And when I watched those movies as a kid, I was like, oh man, Jason, you know, like Max Fisher from Rushmore and Tracy Flick, these are kind of, I kind of relate to them. I kind of find them annoying and interesting, but they're dealing with these old guys. And now I watch these movies and I'm like, oh, I relate to these old guys now a little bit more. It's like, oh, I understand. Like, middle-aged malaise, which is a big part of these movies of that year, it's a real thing. I think I empathize. My empathies are a little more egalitarian at this point for some of the middle-aged characters in these films. Certainly a movie like Eyes Wide Shut, which I don't think I completely understood when I was 23, 24. And I watch that now, and I think there's parts of it that are amazing and parts that are kind of ridiculous about marriage. But I'm like, wow, this is a huge blockbuster Warner Brothers movie that's trying to basically drill down on how marriages fall apart. And that's really interesting to watch now, because that's just not a movie that would get made now.
Today, people talk more about diversity, mm-hmm. whether it's at the Oscars or just generally in film. Was that an issue in 1999? And are there examples of diversity, or was that not quite something that movie executives really worried about that much?
I certainly think one thing that was kind of depressing to me was that in 1999, it did feel that even though the number of people of color and women and LGBTQ filmmakers was still insanely low, it does feel like it was maybe a little bit better than it was 2 or 3 years ago. And certainly there were some really amazing things. I mean, Kimberly Pierce, who directed and co-wrote Boys Don't Cry, which was this, you know, Oscar-nominated kind of really small movie that became a little sort of mini-cultural phenomenon. You know, I don't know if that would have happened in the late 80s. I think maybe there was some progress in the 90s. I certainly think, you know, there's a chapter in the book about two movies, The Best Man in the Wood, which were both directed by first-time African-American writer-directors. They both became box office hits, and those people, both those filmmakers, Malcolm Lee and Rick Famuyiwa, both wound up becoming really big players. And that came after many years of what had really been a boom for African-American filmmaking in the 90s. But I don't think that the picture back then was any better than it is now. And I think that's one of the reasons why we put those little periods after best movie year ever, because I think nothing could be the best movie year ever when you're still mostly dominated by white guys. And these were movies that were made by white guys, greenlit by white guys, and mostly starring white guys. So a lot of these movies were just very white guy concerned films. And I think it's for the best that we have a lot more storytellers now who are getting a chance to make things. I don't think it's anywhere near where it needs to be.
Hmm. Is there a top three for you from 1999? Ones that you've really enjoyed going back to, or ones that really impacted you more than any other?
It changes a lot. My top five, it's changed pretty much every week to week in the last 2.5 years. However, my number one, I do think Election is my favorite movie that year. I do think it's probably the best movie that year. That's something that, it's a movie that every time I would talk to filmmakers, you know, once in a while a filmmaker would be like, can I go off the record and talk about how I hate this movie? And no one says that about Election. Everyone I spoke to, whether it's David Fincher or Sofia Coppola, everyone loves Election. I think it's really smart. I think it's a classic American comedy. I watched that movie repeatedly over the last 2.5 years. I don't know a single second I would take out of it.
That is Brian Raftery. He's author of the book Best Movie Year Ever, How 1999 Blew Up the Big Screen.